This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I hit it a bunch of times at the kiosk after hours at like 10 o'clock, 10:30. So every ticket can only print out so much. So you had to keep hitting it like $200, $200, could only print out 20,000 increments. And then it started to move late and I kept hitting it all the way down to 50-1. And they finally took it off the board. But the ultimate payout was 297 grand. But
hey now, what's cracking? Welcome back to the Jim Rome Podcast, episode 229, where this week we are going to switch up and take a deep dive into one of my all-time favorite things, sports betting. And we'll do so with somebody who knows that world as well as anybody, anywhere, because my guest this week is ESPN sports betting analyst and the host of Daily Wager, Doug Kazarian. Essentially, Doug is the expert that experts turn to. He built a career and a reputation as a staple in the Vegas sports media. He's on TV. He's on radio. He's got a podcast. He's always hanging in the sports book. And now he's making his original side hustle debut. So let's get right after it. It's episode 229 with ESPN betting analyst Doug Kazarian. And it's coming at you right now. All right, Doug, first things first, great to see a fellow LA native tearing it up and living the dream. I know how busy you are, so I really appreciate you making time for this pod. How you living, my man? How is everything?
You said it best. I'm living the dream. I mean, you got to pinch yourself sometimes because, as you know, this business is so subjective, right? It's not track and field. It's not swimming, where your time is clearly better than that person's time that you get to go and get pushed forward. So over the years, just kind of grinding in the industry, I mean, I've enjoyed the ride, don't get me wrong, but obviously you catch a lot of breaks. Some would say you create some luck as well, but things have definitely broken right for me. And then obviously having this pivot to betting, just because my local sports casting career took me through Vegas, so I had this pedigree and was able to sort of maximize it within the ESPN ecosystem. So I'm very fortunate, for sure.
All right, so you get it. I get that you get it, and I appreciate that. You mentioned the pivot. I was going to ask you about that. You've covered sports betting now for the better part of 15 years. You started to touch on this, Doug, but I was going to say, how did you first get into this space? For instance, were you always interested, or did it just sort of find you?
It's a little bit of both. And I'll start at the finish almost. And as my best friend was telling his dad recently, he goes, not only did Doug get a new contract, but he got a new contract because of gambling. And that's the headline, because it goes back to like high school days. I'm the youngest of five brothers, so I grew up with a lot of sports around me. Like I always joke that I never watched any cartoons as a kid because I never had control of the remote and just was so immersed. It was during the Showtime era of the Lakers and then all, you know, Kirk Gibson's home run and all that stuff. Just to die hard, I did fantasy in like third grade because my older brothers did it with like their college buddies. So I was just always into like numbers. And then, as you very well know, and many people listening, the sports pages back in the day had like point spreads in the box score page, the Agate page. And so I just always be fascinated by that. And by like seventh or eighth grade, I'm in football pick'em leagues. And then it just kind of goes from there. I mean, my first bet was Super Bowl with the Giants. It was the year after the Patriots Bears, and my two brothers bet each other $5, and I loved how the other one was taunting the other one after the blowout. So I said, I got to get in on this. So the next Super Bowl, I was like, I'm in. And then from there, I've always been fascinated by it. But then it was still that stigma. And a lot of people in the broadcasting, for those who don't know, it's sort of like minor league baseball, where you kind of start out in single A, double A, triple A, and hopefully you get called to the show. And it's just market size. So I started in Missouri, was in Iowa for 4 years. And then I was interviewing with a couple stations, and then Vegas called, and I got the Vegas gig. So I come through the conventional sports broadcasting path, and I was the local 6-11 sports guy. And then you get here, and there was no Golden Knights. There was no Vegas Raiders there. And in 2005, really the home team was like sports betting, right? Yes, there was boxing and UFC, but those don't happen every weekend in terms of like they do now in terms of UFC. So I basically just started covering betting, and I would interview odds makers. And, you know, you have the weekend 30-minute show, the magazine show after the news on Sunday nights. I had tons of odds makers, tons of pro bettors. And then I really just got heavy into it. I would do a pick on the nightly news. I'd even show some bad beats if it was like, you know, primetime football game or something like that, where it really impacted, because the local Vegas viewing market is so different. It's transient. So it's not just all about, hey, this high school team won. It's such a melting pot of people from all over. So the betting was the common theme that sort of really resonated with our local viewers. And because of that, I kind of befriended some guys at the local newspaper, the Las Vegas Review-Journal. And then we launched our own betting show. And it was at midnight because we all had to get our regular work done. And we did an hour show every night, stayed up late, updating the website, posted it, the podcast as well, so people in regular hours could listen to it the next day. And it just turns out that it was a hit. Local ESPN radio bought us. We went drive time radio. And then that's when I got the ESPN call. So I had to kind of walk away from that world of betting for a little bit. And I went to ESPN, and then that's back to sort of conventional anchoring. So I was hosting SportsCenter and Baseball Tonight, you know, NFL shows, NBA stuff, doing radio, College Game Day radio. And then eventually we'd weave in a little betting, but it wasn't until the Supreme Court ruling in 2018 that things really pivoted, as you know, with the leagues getting on board, being advertising partnerships with the gaming operators. And then that sort of, they removed a federal ban, was the ruling at PASPA in 2018. So that just allowed ESPN to get more involved. And throughout all this, I'm surviving these layoffs because of this background in betting, and they know that I have it. So it just worked out where ESPN got all in once the leagues got all in, and there I was already in the ecosystem of ESPN, ready to rock. And my buddy jokes, he's like, you know, you did all these like different jobs, like the one solo SportsCenter, co-anchored SportsCenter, radio for 7 hours, regular talk radio, Baseball Tonight. It's like you were like Danielson doing the painting of the fences, because all those shows, you develop certain muscles for hosting, because this show is so unique. Like, I'm a host of Daily Wager, but I also participate as an analyst. So it's like you drive the conversation, participate. It's very different. And so all these so for 5 years, basically, I was training for Daily Wager. I didn't know it at the time, nor did ESPN, but it just worked out perfectly. And it sounds too good to be true that ESPN already had their guy, but it turns out they thought they did as well.
Doug, listen, I cannot begin to tell you how pleased I am that you answered that the way you did, because I'm not sure you could find somebody who's got a greater appreciation for what you just said than what you just said than me. Oh, yeah. I absolutely love that sound. Brings a smile to my face every single time, because that is the sound of another sale on Shopify, the all-in-one commerce platform to start, run, and grow your business. That's why I love that sound. Shopify gives entrepreneurs the resources once reserved for big business, so upstarts, startups, and established businesses alike can sell everywhere and synchronize online and in-person sales and effortlessly stay informed. They can do all of that for you. Listen, scaling your business is a journey of endless possibility. I know this. I know where we started. I know where we are right now, and I'm still on that journey. And like mine, Shopify powers over millions of businesses from first sale to full scale. Reach customers online and across social networks with an ever-growing suite of channel integrations and apps, including Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, Pinterest, and more. More than a store, Shopify grows with you. Go to shopify.com/Rome, all lowercase, and get a free 14-day trial and get full access to Shopify's entire suite of features. Grow your business with Shopify today. Go to shopify.com/ROME right now, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/ROME. I mean, it's really an amazing thing that you came up the way you did, because I ordinarily would have said, how did you learn about the space? What was your process? And you just laid it all out. But as somebody who's been in this game a very, very long time, it was not that long ago that the whole thing was so taboo. Like, it's amazing to me, Doug. Like, I used to actually take pride in the fact that, hey, I don't need to get down to enjoy a game. I don't need to have action on a game to enjoy a game. And now it's amazing to me how differently, and this is somebody, I've been in the game a long time, it's amazing to me how differently I watch games. Now, I got to be objective. And I would never, ever want the action that I have to color my opinion on anything at all. Then you're not doing your job. But I'm telling you, as somebody who grew up on sports like you did in Los Angeles, I mean, I was obsessed as a kid with sports. It is incredible, even as a professional in this business, how differently I watch a game right now based on the action that I have in a game. And it's not even that much action. How do you explain that? The psychology of that.
Point. And you're right about the color of my opinion. It's funny, like I'll tweet like, oh, they're mismanaging the clock. This is silly. And some guys on Twitter will be just be like, oh, you must have lost a lot. I'm like, I didn't even have, you know, I had the other side. I'm just commenting as a sports fan. So at the end of the day, I'm a diehard sports fan, and I grew up, and, you know, coaching malpractice just kills me, whether it's me botching timeouts or challenges or whatnot. I think the Americans, the stigma is slowly eroding. And initially I thought it eroded really quickly. I was really impressed with the leagues getting on board because they didn't really know much. I mean, think about it. It was a federal ban on something. They didn't want to know about betting. It wasn't pertaining to their billion-dollar industry. But once the federal ban was lifted, they're saying, okay, let's explore this. And they didn't really know. I mean, you have guys like Al Leiter talking about $500,000 bets on the first pitch being a ball or strike. It's like so untrue, right? You can't do that. So it's just a fact-finding mission for all these leagues. And obviously they have these huge companies worth so much money. And they were open-minded about it. And actually, they had watched a bunch of our demos. We've sent them some tape stuff before we even launched, and they slowly got on board. And when we launched, we didn't even have video rights for a lot of these leagues. And then all these leagues are now on board, and then obviously things are taking off. I think it's going to be interesting what happens at the finished product, right? There's definitely a fluidity to this. At what point is it too saturated, whether it be commercials or announcers? Like, what's the sweet spot? Obviously, it's interesting when there's a huge upset, and you can use it as sort of an analytic, like, hey, they were a 26-point dog at home. That's the largest home under, or, you know, favorite to lose since whatever, 2015 in college football, whatever it may be. It's a way to provide context. So it's a nice tool in that regard. And then sometimes, you know, we hear the Brent Musburger or whoever talking about the over-under in the last couple of minutes. Al Michaels does it a lot. So there's something in between that, right? And whether it be graphics on the page, having a, you know, we have sort of the rules expert, right? The former ref, whether it be NBA, whatever. And they come on, like, are we going to have a betting expert mid-game talk about stuff? Or maybe just give the splits of like, hey, 80% of the money's on the second half over, but the line didn't move or something like that. I don't know where we're going to be. Maybe it's just going to be an alternate screen viewing experience because there's so many options, obviously, in the bottomless internet, and then everything's digital these days. So it's going to be interesting where this heads. I'm fascinated by it. But just at the beginning of it all, to be along for the ride and to see the viewers, to your point earlier about just a little action, how that gets more interest, it was always the case. I'll go back to this. I think it was 10 years ago, actually, or maybe longer. It was when Peyton Manning had that late scratch to the season. He had the neck surgery, but we didn't even know it till like end of preseason, and then he was out for the year. So the schedule was already out. Colts were terrible that year, and they were playing the Bucs on a Monday night, and I want to say late October. And it was literally like Bucks were up like 30-6 or something ridiculous. And the viewing rating on that game at that juncture in the game was higher than a baseball playoff game. Jeter was at bat with a tying run in the ninth on second base. And so the ratings points were still higher for that Monday Night Football game in a blowout. Peyton Manning's not even playing. It's like raining. And the Yankees are playing Jeter at the dish in a playoff game. And clearly gambling is the reason why that people, or maybe fantasy, but not a lot of Colts were on playoff rosters or whatever it was, you know? So I just think people finally started to understand that it's part of our culture. And the other thing is, betting wasn't invented 4 years ago with the Supreme Court ruling. It's been going on forever. And the leagues just kind of got on board and realized, well, let's get this everything above board, whether it be the betting and get it off the black market. And then, because they're in the same business of having fair game and everything's up and up. So it's been awesome to watch and see, and even consumers, right? You're going to always have those outlier idiots who, you know, tweet at a player or something. But for the most part, it's been a great injection to the sports consumption of everything.
Doug, it's an amazing point, like the one you made about Peyton Manning. For instance, I'll never forget back in the day, like I'd go into a sports book and it was so great. And this is back in the day. You'd go into a sports book and they'd have these games up and you could see these wild, wild reactions at the end of games that really had ended long before the end of the game. And it was so great to see the reaction because of gambling. Like that part of it will never not blow my mind. You know, the sort of shit that happens in the final minutes of essentially any sport, the crazy stuff that happens in garbage time, the stuff that creates the horrible beats and some wild wins. I mean, compare what it was like to watch those games before having a betting interest, and now the roller coaster ride that we're on almost in any game, at the end of any game, even if that game was literally over at halftime.
Well, I'm a big in-game better, live better. So like 95% of my action is all like during the game.
And 95%?
Yeah, it's sort of like a day trade. I mean, so going back to my first Vegas stint, when I was doing all these articles and interviews for my local content, I was creating a circle and Rolodex, if you will. So I became pretty tight with a lot of odds makers, and I have an econ degree. So like I was kind of like stimulated by the math of it all. So I got really into like the live betting even back then. And it's just grown from then, because you can do what finance guys on Wall Street call arbitraging and derivative trading. So I do a lot of that with the numbers of in-game betting. And, you know, if you think about it, the stock market, it's like Eddie Murphy in trading places when the Randolph and Mortimer explained to them, what do they do? And he goes, sounds to me like you guys are a couple bookies. And that's, in a lot of ways, that's
so
what it is.
Great. I love that movie. By the way, I love that movie. I've always loved that movie.
It's like, oh, I bought some at 3, sold some at 4.5, you know, as the line moves throughout the week in an NFL game. So there's a lot of like that similar concept, and you're just creating derivatives, which is like creating middles, like a, you know, an over 40, under 42.5 or something like that. And you just learn, and now the market gets tighter, so you try to find other angles and through it all. So in-game betting is where I think there's vulnerability as opposed to the flat wagers. Now, the reason I do that is I can create a portfolio within the game, right? So like a -3 and +4. But going to your come full circle, the reason I like doing that is you can create like bigger payouts. Let's say it's 10-1 based on two numbers or something like that, because I'd rather have that than sweating out the final 2 minutes of a game with all this nonsense that you were alluding to. And if you think about it, we're all kind of idiots to be betting on some of this stuff, because the last, I don't know, 5% or 10% of a game is played so differently than the first 90%. Because, you know, in hockey, they pull goalies at the end. Baseball, it's more small ball in the eighth and ninth inning with relievers and short hooks. And it's just a different game, advancing the runner, that is the beginning of the game. And then the home field, you know, the home team has such an advantage. Basketball, you have the chucking of threes and dribble outs and fouling. And then football, you have the prevent defense and the other team chucking and ducking the football. So it's just crazy that we're handicapping the game based on the first 90% of it. And then the last 10% or whatever, 5% is just nonsense. And it's crazy. So I'd rather have these wild payouts if you know how to manage it and kind of walk the tightrope. It's dangerous, but it's also very lucrative if you know what you're doing, kind of balancing your portfolio and building that sort of derivative or arbitrage.
The action never ends at DraftKings Sportsbook, especially this summer. With tons of ways to bet on all your favorite sports, you can fuel your fandom and feel the heat of the season like never before. Plus, right now, DraftKings Sportsbook is now giving new customers a risk-free bet of up to $1,000. That's right. Make your first bet up to $1,000, and if it doesn't win, you'll get another shot to cash in. You can throw down on all the major action for baseball, golf, MMA, and more. Plus, with same game parlays, spreads, money lines, over unders, and props, your betting options feel endless. I absolutely love all the options you have. You will too. Best of all, DraftKings is safe, secure, reliable. You can deposit and withdraw your cash whenever you want. Something else that's very important to me. So download the DraftKings Sportsbook app right now. Use the promo code ROME. Make your first deposit and get a risk-free bet of up to $1,000. Promo code ROME, ROME. Only at DraftKings Sportsbook. Minimum age and eligibility restrictions do apply. See show notes for details. All right, so let me ask you this. Like, I'm picking my spots carefully with you, and obviously we're talking. Like, there's some serious handicappers right now that are like, yeah, great, tell me something I don't know. But however, as more and more states legalize this and we get more and more new players, I think it's good for us to kind of give them a general background and to start in these certain places. You answered this next question, Doug, in part when you said, hey, one of the ways to beat this or one of these ways to get an edge is to bet in-game. But just generally, let me ask you this. How is the average player supposed to get an edge against the odds makers, the pros, and betting markets overall, because it is really tough?
100%. Okay, a couple things. Because of the legalization and that these gaming operators, these sports books are in the customer acquisition phase, they are offering a ton of options on the betting menu. So there are those fantasy people or people who really know their favorite team. There's just tons of prop bets. Now, there's not huge limits on it, but we're not talking about guys trying to break the bank, because back only 1% or can be like net positive winners. But I think that can be done if you stick to your guns. And let's say you're a fantasy guy. There's tons of vulnerability on each of these games in the prop market, whether it be someone's passing yards or whatever. If you know your stuff, you're not going to get rich, but you can do well and be a successful bettor because there's just so much on the betting menu to begin with. Now, the flip side is, much like the poker boom in the early 2000s, sports betting had a similar transition of sort of the computer modelers and the math guys, right? So what they do is they just simulate every matchup, like let's say 10,000 times, maybe 100,000 times, right? And there becomes like a bell curve of all the possible outcomes in this game. And the middle of that bell curve is where the point spread is. And if their line, what they made it, is different by 2%, 3%, 4% edge than the book, than the betting market, then they'll bet. So they're more in the like 3%, like the volume edge. Now what happens is the sports books now with technology in 2022 have profiled every account. Like the Westgate Superbook here in Las Vegas has seven tiers of profiled bettors, right? So it's like complete recreational and then complete expert. And then some guys who are solid, you know, so there's seven different tiers. I would think there'd be like three. So what they do is they respect certain wagers so much, and then they'll move the market. So what happened is happens now is like the math guys are dictating the market, where before this insertion of them in early 2000s, it was all about like the old school handicappers, the eye test guys, right? And then the math guys were the ones to exploit the vulnerability. So now that the math guys are all doing it and they try to beat each other by like their 2%, the old school eye test approach, like what's called situational handicapping, is now where you can find edges in the model. So situational, what is that? It's like a letdown game or a flat spot. You know, during the college football, Bama beats LSU, and then like the next week they're 48-point favorites over Citadel or something like that. Now, Bama's maybe not a good example because Saban always gets them to come out. But other teams like that off a big win, you know, Kansas pulls a win, can they back it up? Or things like that. Teams lose. Sometimes it's like in golf when you have a bad shot, you almost said the next shot's going to be bad too. That happens in college football. A team that has national championship aspirations may lose a game, and then the next game they also lose because their season's over in their eyes because they wanted to go undefeated. So there's all these situational handicaps, like a look-ahead spot where there's like – now, those are really tough to predict, but people like to bet on that kind of stuff. So there are opportunities in that regard. Also, college hoops. Now, I don't follow college hoops. I wish I did as much as I did the NBA because college hoops is very beatable. Think about the volume of games on a Saturday, and if you know some of the smaller conferences really well, like the revenge spot or whatever that, or you can get information on Twitter and kind of beat the odds makers if like a guy's out, things like that. Like I follow the WNBA really closely, and I think it's a great sport to kind of there's opportunities, huge opportunities there to get an edge. So it's about sort of the prop bets. And then in terms of like situational handicapping or just kind of knowing your focus group, you know, it's really well, you can focus on a league or something like that in a sport that has a lot like college football or college hoops. You can find your opportunities for sure.
All right. So really, really good advice there. Let me ask you this. Like you want to have a certain discipline. It's like any kind of investing, right? You want to have a certain discipline. Like I'm as guilty as any other undisciplined bettor in the sense that, and I'm not going to lie, I chase losses. I chase, and I chase for all the wrong reasons. I chase to avoid a losing day. I chase to avoid a losing weekend. I just do it, and I do it way more frequently than I care to admit, but I just do. So let me ask you this. What feeling for you personally, what feeling is more intense, a great win or a bad beat?
Definitely a bad beat if it's the same amount of dollars, right? It usually comes down to the dollars. But if it definitely, like, I hate losing more than I like winning kind of
thing.
That's
it, right.
But to your point, everyone's chased at some point, then you learn not to, and then you nailed it too. Again, it's about avoiding the losing week or something. But if you think about it, like 7 days, or in this case, if it's a losing day, it's like one day. It's such an arbitrary timeline. Like, so what? Just like, you know, if you want to be disciplined, that's why the math guys are so good. Is they just let the computer model do all the work. They remove emotion. And that's sort of – so it's like sometimes you'll have like two like hammer plays back-to-back days, or you'll go 10 days without one. So you might lose a little one week because you're not going to chase Sunday night. So we have fun on the show. We talk about bailout games. Everyone knows about the Hawaii variable on Saturday nights or even the Sunday night NFL game. I joked, you know, last couple Super Bowls ago, I think it was when the Bucks beat the Chiefs. After that, there was like a Cal-Stanford basketball game after the Super Bowl. I was like, my God, this will have more bailouts than Wall Street. Like, I was like, can you imagine just the handle on that game as opposed to like if it were Saturday morning?
That's
but
so
like
funny.
After the Super Bowl, just like the late game, especially on the West Coast because it's not that late in the day. So there's always going to be that. I mean, obviously, you know, you want to like avoid that. Professional bettors, they always say you should bet 1% of your bankroll per unit, right? So it's like one unit all the time. Maybe it's 1.5 units here and there. But, you know, that's them doing their thing. Really, I think a rule of thumb that's good. It's like, don't bet what you want to win, bet what you can afford to lose. And I try to like adopt that philosophy, but we've all been there, man. It's like things seem to be too good to be true. And it's part of the roller coaster that we've chosen to tackle, but it's definitely an uncharted path. Well, I was talking to a college buddy this week and visiting him, and he's like, I don't know. I get so nervous. I'm like, yeah, I'm fearless and an idiot. You're a disciplined doctor. We're very different. But like sometimes, you know, it's just in our DNA.
Yeah, I don't know what it is, Doug. I think part of it is we're on the air and we put ourselves out there and you don't want to be wrong, but it's a strange, strange deal. Like, for instance, I don't have the exposure that I used to have, but there were years where I spent and made and lost ungodly amounts on the thoroughbreds where we owned horses, we bred horses, and I could sleep fairly well at night, but for some reason I'll be watching a football game that I've got $100 on or a couple $100 on, and I'm just sweating it profusely, and I have no idea why. Not in a good way. A good way. Like, I don't know if it's I don't want to be wrong or I don't want to lose.
Is. And what I'm is the same that? Way. It's an ego thing, probably.
I think. Right?
But we all, it's not, ego's maybe a strong, too strong of a word. It's like, everyone wants to be right. Even if you when you were watching a TV show, we like, think who did it in the cop show. We want to be right.
You're right.
It's just like we like being right as a society. I mean, that's what like Twitter is, and social media has become this echo chamber where you follow all the people that think the same, and everybody watches their political news. It's the same echo chamber. You like hearing your validated thoughts, whereas it's not really like healthy, probably in that regard. You have kind of blinders on. But we all like to be validated, whether it be subconsciously or not. But we also like to be right,
and we also love a great story. It's summertime, so it's time to kick back with a great cigar. Whether you're looking for cigars for your special occasion or buying cigars to make it a special occasion, Famous Smoke Shop has exactly what you need. With 83 years in the cigar business, Famous Smoke offers the authentic cigar shop experience, expert advice, and a huge selection of premium cigars, boxes, singles, samplers, and more, all under one roof at discount prices. Famous Smoke was even named the best place to buy cigars online by Cool Material and Cigar World. Plus, every cigar is backed by their 30-day guarantee, so your cigars arrive fresh or your money back. Remember, you don't have to be famous to smoke their cigars. To save $10 off your purchase of $50, go to famous-smoke.com. That's famous-smoke.com and use the code ROME10 or text ROME10 to 511-511. Get your favorite cigars, including Romeo, Acid, Macanudo, and more. Text ROME and the number 10 to 511-511 or go to famous-smoke.com today. You may receive up to one additional text. Text fees may apply. Text stop to opt out. I think I know the answer to this, but what is the biggest win you've ever had? Lay it out. How did that play out emotionally? What was that roller coaster like?
Yeah, it was a year ago, just a little over a year ago in the draft of the NFL. And, the draft betting, I think I've talked a lot of odds makers. They're over. There's going to be a lot less options on the betting board because it's such a different animal and there's such volatility in the market. And you're really handicapping people's behavior. And there's a lot of misinformation out there, especially months out. Because, let's say that 2 days before a game, some team's like a minus 400 favorite. They're not going to go off as an underdog. But in a betting, in like some of the first pick or whatever, we've seen huge changes, whether it be Ben Caro and the NBA or going back to the last couple NFL drafts, like Trey Lance, last year was crazy, right? Right in the last few days, moved up for that pick with the Niners. So you see these drastic changes, and it's all like a race for information. And in the spring with the NFL draft, there's so much going on with the NBA, who's out, load management, all that. So oddsmakers are just like overwhelmed tracking this all. So there's tons of vulnerability. So last year there was, and I have a partner, and he's really immersed in the NFL draft. He was telling me about this guy, Tyson Campbell, who played at Georgia, was a defensive back, and he was climbing the charts. So his opening over-under was like, 60 and a half or something like 58 and a half. So basically end of the second round. You can bet over or under, for those who aren't familiar with draft betting, just what number he's going to be drafted. And I think that's a little much because early in the draft, it's easy to forecast. But once you start getting at the end of the first round and second round, it's impossible to know what these teams are thinking. They don't even know what they're going to get because what's on the board. And so the fact that you can bet on that is pretty crazy. But his over under moved all the way to like 42 and a half, so like mid second round. But what happened is like the domino effect, the odds makers don't move other what's called an index bet. Like, hey, who's going to win the Super Bowl of all these teams? That's an index bet. So there's a lot of other category bets and index bets you can make in the NFL drafts, like who's going to be the first running back, who's going to be the first wide receiver. This year was a really fun prop because there was like three guys that really could have gone one. There was like seven in the first round or something. So there was an index, and it was first safety drafted. And what happened is this was like they put these up like a month and a half out, and a lot of times things change. And there's also tweeners in the draft, as you very well know. So there's like edge rushers who may be linebacker in college, but they forecast as an edge rusher. And in this case, corners and safety, sometimes one guy is like more of a safety in the pros than he is a corner. So this guy, Tyson Campbell, projected as a safety, actually, but he played corner at Georgia, was listed in the index of safeties. And so this move happens, and he's like 42 and a half, and I kind of heard about him. So like the Monday before the draft, the Monday night, I see him, listed in this index, and they had a minus like 400 favorite, Trevor Moehrig, Woodard at a TCU, and then they had two guys like, I don't know, 2-1 or plus 250, something like that, and then everyone else 100-1, which is actually kind of normal for an index if you have that big of a favorite and you have a couple others around 2-1, sort of balance out to have a certain hold percentage. You kind of need the 100-1s. And Moehrig Woodard was projected the Raiders at like 18 or 19, but this was a safety thing. So Campbell's listed in the safety index, and he's a corner, so it's a huge position in terms of importance, right? Kind of like quarterback, left tackle, and wide receiver now. Those three, and then I think fourth is like corner if it's not third. And so what happened is the Raiders think outside the box like, you know, Mayock does, and they draft a guy who they could have got mid-second round that he was projected an offensive lineman. And then it's like so nuanced and perfect storm. So like the safety Moehrig is not like a huge position of need for all these teams in the 20s. They needed a wide receiver or corner. So no safeties get taken in the first round. And so I'm live. Meanwhile, I've watched it, and I'm like so – I mean, they drafted Campbell's teammate, Stokes, who went to Green Bay. So, like, just teasing me, right, because I have a huge bet at 100-1. And because I just thought there was great value there, I thought it should have been, like, 20-1. And it turns out Urban Meyer – obviously, the Jags had the worst record, so they're the first pick of the second round. When Urban Meyer was at Ohio State, he had recruited Tyson Campbell heavily as a safety because he was played for a stud high school in Florida. I believe the same one as Patrick Surtain Jr. So, like, he was going to get his guy finally and play him at safety. So he drafted him first in the second round as a safety, or portraying to play both positions. And I don't think he would have been drafted where he was drafted if not for Urban Meyer and going back to his days in high school. And it just worked out because then there was another actual safety drafted like three picks later. So that was obviously awesome, that 100-1 cash, because it's hard enough to find decent value at 100-1. But for it to actually come to fruition was fantastic.
So how hard did you hit that?
So it was. I hit it a bunch of times at the kiosk at the middle, you know, after hours at like 10 o'clock, 10:30. So every ticket can only print out so much. So you had to keep hitting it like $200, $200, could only print out 20,000 increments. And then it started to move late, and I kept hitting it all the way down to 50-1. And they finally took it off the board. But people, so the ultimate payout was $297,000. But I did lay some off. So I like that overnight, there was like reports of Urban Meyer drafting Tyson Campbell because there's so much time between the last pick of the first round and the first pick of the second round, a full day essentially. So a lot of places like DraftKings, FanDuel put up odds like who are the Jaguars going to take. So I was able to like kind of lay it off some of that. So I still made like heavy, heavy six figures. Don't get me wrong, but it wasn't exactly 297. I was able to lay it off and my partner got some. So it was great in that regard. We were able to middle it or hedge some of it, and that's okay. I mean, obviously, in looking back, it'd been great to not hedge, but I think you do the right thing at that point, and we're able to lay it off at like good odds.
It's an absolutely amazing story. If you don't mind, can you indulge me before I let you go? Because I can give you the flip side of that, if you don't mind.
Sure.
Like, I tell most people this story, and they won't get it. I know you will understand this. Let me give you the short version of this, because I don't know that I will ever live this down. My wife, Janet, and I, as I mentioned, we have dabbled in horse racing for the better part of a decade and a half. Right now, Doug, we're a partner in a stallion here in California. We race his horse as a group named Straight Fire. We decided to stand him as a stallion. Obviously, we're interested in all the babies and how they do. The better the babies run, the better the business for the stallion. So I always bet a horse that we have an interest in when they run. It's not a big deal to me, right? The big bet is when you buy the horse. Like, it's different than anything else. You can't talk to a horse. You can't ask a horse any questions. Right. You're like, you're betting pedigree. You're betting how they work, whatever information, whatever. So we're partners in this filly, which is a progeny, an offspring of this horse. And I'm a part owner of the horse. The horse is running up at Golden Gate, which is, you know, respectfully, it's kind of like the minor leagues. It's a really nice area, but it's kind of like the minor leagues. I hear, Doug, all of a sudden that the trainer is going to ship her in to run in a stake race at Santa Anita. It's a big, big swing. I ask our race manager, why the hell are we doing that? She doesn't fit with that group. She's not good enough. He says to me, the trainer says she does have a shot. I personally don't agree. In fact, I forget about the race altogether. Not only do I not watch the race live, something that never happens, I don't even tape the race. And most of all, I do not bet on the race, something I never do. Keep in mind, I'm part owner of this horse. Dude, she goes off 70-1. Not to be a jerk, but we generally do not own horses that are 70-1. Believe me, my partners in this horse, some of the best in the business, they've never gone into the gate at 70-1. So I don't know why we're running her. I forget that we're running her. I go to run some errands, and then I get a phone call from one of my guys who says, dude,
did you just win a stake at 70-1? And I said, holy shit, did that filly win that race? My guy goes, she did. Doug, I owned a part of the horse and did not bet a horse that went off 70-1 and won. Tell me something more stupid than that.
That is painful. That is painful. I don't think I can one-up you on that, but I can somewhat
No,
identify.
Nobody can. Nobody's ever done anything that dumb. Nobody can one-up me on that. We can talk about how complicated other banks make it to redeem credit card rewards, like how they require minimums and worse, how their rewards flat out expire. Or we could talk about how with Discover, you can redeem your rewards for cash in any amount at any time. I mean, you want to talk about amazing. And now that we've talked about that, let's get back to talking sports. You know, the stuff that we talk about right here. Learn more at discover.com/redeem rewards. Terms do apply. Go ahead and share that with me, whatever you have.
Well, when I was covering the beat of betting back in Bristol, and we were doing the show from back there and stuff, I went out to the Super Bowl week to cover like sports Super Bowl betting from a sports book in Vegas, right? And I went behind the camera, behind the scenes of the day, like the Wednesday after the championship game where they make all the props, the hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of props, and did all this behind the scene. I was there for the unveiling of all the odds, and there it was, the Rams-Patriots Super Bowl, and it was, will there be no score in the no touchdown the first half? And it was 100-1. I was like, oh my God, this is like the best bet. But I was busy like doing interviews, and I think a pro bettor picked it off. And then it was like 40-1, and I still didn't bet it. I was in Vegas for 8 days. For three of those days, I was talking about it. I mentioned it on my podcast both weeks before the Super Bowl. I said, this is a bet. I went on SportsCenter once I got back to Bristol and it said that this was my favorite prop bet. I tweeted about it, and sure enough, I didn't get any money on it, and there was no touchdown in the first half of the Super Bowl. So I'm just kicking myself. I'm literally in a Vegas book seeing the 100-1 right there. And that's something I would have put a similar amount. So that's why I went after it with the Tyson Campbell thing. I had a second chance to hit the 100-1. But that's the thing. You only need – I mean, it's so much better to hit, you know, a decent-sized bet at 100-1 than it is all these other 4-1s and 3-1s. It just – you know, you just need one. And that – you know, we all know Patriots have no touchdowns in their Super Bowl run in the first quarter. And then Belichick against Jared Goff with 2 weeks to prepare. So really all you need is like a fluke drive or two for the Patriots and maybe get lucky. I didn't think 100-1 was the right price at all, and it turns out they had no touchdown, but I was just kicking myself forever. And it still burns me to this day because it's 100-1. It's not 10-1. So in your case, I get it. 71, and you should be the first guy in line to bet it.
Right. We own the horse, but you nailed it. That's why I had to share that with you. I actually feel a little bit better having shared that with you because I knew that you would understand, and you also understand the concept. We talk about this in horse racing all the time. All it takes is one. All it takes is one to cover all the other ones that do not hit. Doug, it's such an amazing conversation. For those who do not know or may have forgotten, where can our listeners find The Daily Show and your podcast and everything you're doing right now, because you're pushing out a lot of content?
Yeah, thank you. And it's going to really ramp up come football season, just like a lot of other people. So basically, right now, the show, sometimes it moves around, but 6 Eastern on ESPN2. Like this week, we're doing a couple half-hour shows. We're at the expense of like some other content, like when Little League World Series starts up or U.S. Open tennis. We're going to be off the air, maybe move to the mornings. But for the most part, it's 6 to 7 p.m. Eastern on ESPN2. The podcast is dark right now, but in August, it'll return. It's Daily Wager Podcast. We're thinking about tweaking some of it. But we also do a lot of like content, like our futures are like this week we're doing a bunch of college football futures, like our favorite Heisman bets, our favorite win total bets, and that's all on ESPN.com, what's called the chalk section. So that's the whole section of ESPN.com dedicated to betting. And then I'm also on Twitter with some stuff at Doug ESPN. So it's a little bit tough to find at some point because sometimes we bounce around with our show times, but that's just, you know, at the mercy of a network that has other commitments like games. And, you know, you'll see SportsCenter bounce around too and stuff like that. So it's just, that's just the nature of our broadcasting world, as you very well know. And it's great. I mean, to be able to talk about betting, I mean, I'll always say this. Like when we launched the show at the end of the last block, we'd have like one of the established ESPNers come in and just kind of like, you know, chat for a little bit. So we had like Steve Levy or Melrose and Van Pelt come on for like the last little few minutes. And Kenny Mayne was on. And he goes, I've been sitting over here. You guys have been talking gambling for the entire hour. Do the bosses know this? And it was so funny.
That is funny.
Had, Right, because we had, you know, you're doing something. It's like, this doesn't feel right, but it actually is. And it was new, obviously. So it was just so awesome. It's still, to this day, the funniest line we've heard on the show.
It's really, really funny and very Kenny Mayne-ish. And yeah. I want to say, the things I respect most about you, Doug, number one, you know what you're doing. You're very good at what you're doing. And number two, most of all, you understand how awesome it is that you have that opportunity. And I know you're making the most of it. Listen, I appreciate the time. I appreciate the content. Really good to get caught up with you. And thanks so much for doing that. That was tremendous.
Thank you so much for the kind words and the opportunity. I grew up a big fan in L.A., obviously the local radio before national, so I remember it all. And I've been a junkie ever since, so it's been great to hear you continue to thrive as well and to be invited on your pod.
Hey, I tried to tell you there was going to be some high-level gambling talk, and Doug absolutely knocked it right out of the yard. Covered everything from how he established himself in Vegas to how he learned how to beat the books. This dude has a story and an approach unlike anybody else. So it was great to get a chance to pull some of that knowledge and see a true insider's perspective on the wagering game itself. If you're interested in more next-level conversations that you will not get anywhere else, consider taking a second and subscribing right now. This way, every new ep will find its way directly to you, and you will never have to worry about having to hunt it down yourself. Or you could check out any of the other 200-plus episodes that we already have banked. There is a ton of content already in the can, plenty more on the way. So again, consider subscribing, and while you do, I am going to leave you with your voicemails.
First new message.
What's up, Jim? Mike in Detroit. Great idea by Rat Manfred with the home run derby to decide the All-Star game. Why not just go with a skee-ball game or that thing where you put the hands up to decide who bats first? Also, Gino in San Antonio. What's happening, partner? Nice take. Goes along with your great stash. What a freaking pervert, loser.
Message saved. Next message.
Romy, Justin in Melbourne, man. I hope you and the fam are having a wonderful time there in Wisco. I don't know about your fourth, but mine was very, very successful. After a great fireworks show, I woke up the next morning and I had all five digits on me.
Message saved. Next message.
Rome, hey, Jacques in North Carolina. Just wanted to let you know that I was watching the SEC Network, and none other than Urban Meyer said one of the first things he did when he got to the University of Florida is he wanted to know more about the culture. So he went directly to the first sorority he could find. How fitting, Urban Meyer, the first thing he does when he gets to Florida is find a local sorority house. Just thought you might want to hear that. Do with it what you will, brother.
Message saved. Next message.
What's up, man? Lips Max Brady. Welcome back. Glad to hear the trip went well. I was actually out in the Midwest myself and the South. Gained 2 pounds. So, you know, for a vegan, that's actually a lot. But, you know, I already worked that off, and I'm glad that you already had a plan going into it. Still, I hope the recovery from that Wisco diet is going all right. Talk to you later.
Message saved. Next message.
Hi, Jim. Bella B in Calgary. Remember when you did that Reinvention Project podcast starring you? Well, how about you do a Jim Rome podcast starring Storytime Jim Rome? There's so much to get caught up on. We want to hear about Rogan Loam and that Illinois squatter. We want to hear about those Canadian geese. We want to hear about Woody and why he didn't have that epic breakfast. Anything. Storytime is the best.
Message deleted. You have no more messages.